several questions. What is the highest technique you hope to achieve?
To have no technique.
Very good. What are your thoughts when facing an opponent?
There is no opponent.
Then why is that?
Because the word I does not exist.
Continue.
A good fight should be like a small play, but played seriously. A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready. Not thinking, yet not dreaming. Ready for whatever may come. When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus movie review of Enter the Dragon.
Gentlemen, welcome. You honor our island. I look forward to a tournament of truly epic proportions.
Hosted by Arnie.
I see your talents have gone beyond the mere physical level. Your skills are now at the point of spiritual insight.
Justin.
Another fine mess you got me into.
And Jacob.
Man, you come right out of a comic book.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
You will not agree with what I'm going to do.
It is contrary to all that you have taught me.
Listener discretion is advised.
Mr. Lee, are you ready?
Today, we're talking about Enter the Dragon, starring Bruce Lee, John Saxon, Anna Capri, directed by Robert Klaus. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, and I'm here to try the art of podcasting without podcasting.
This is Justin.
And this is the host whose reviews are unorthodox, but effective, Jacob. Podcasting without podcasting, that would save on the editing.
Podcasting without editing alone would be enough, right? The recording and watching the movies isn't so bad. It's the 12 hours after. And that's why I want to start by thanking our patrons. Because of you, we have editors able to help us out and the bandwidth to handle the shows and the tenacity to keep going week after week, year after year. So thank you, patrons, for being with us for this month's review. We weren't quite sure what we were going to do, but then it came up. We're reviewing Mortal Kombat, and I think it could be a drinking game how often we mention Enter the Dragon during the Mortal Kombat review. So why not just go to the original, Enter the Dragon? I actually watched it to prepare for Mortal Kombat, and then we decided to review it, so I got the joy of watching it again.
You see, and I did the opposite. I wasn't on Mortal Kombat. Thank goodness, because I did watch it, because I know that's why we're doing Enter the Dragon. Stuart's off eating spotted dick over in the UK on some vacation, so I'm stepping in, which I'm glad. This is one of my favorite martial arts films. Big Bruce Lee fan, so happy to talk about this, even if I did sit through that first Mortal Kombat one. Couldn't do the second one, sorry. That first one was not good.
Yeah, I mean, we've had dragons on the mind all throughout the video game series. I mean, we've had...
You did the last dragon, right?
Yeah, we did the last dragon. We've done Double Dragon, Mortal Kombat, and all that. I mean, we've been circling the drain on this, so it seems like the perfect one to toss in here at this time.
Yeah, it turns out Double Dragon did have a reference that I didn't even realize to Enter the Dragon. Two of the enemies in the Double Dragon game, Roper and Williams.
Oh.
That's two of the characters we're going to be talking about here.
Oh. Yeah, I don't see how most modern kung fu films don't reference this. I mean, we did Kill Bill. They reference Bruce Lee with that motorcycle outfit. But this is the big one. I'm the Bruce Lee fan. I'm the kung fu martial arts movie fan. And it's funny because I came to Bruce Lee a little late in my kung fu game. I really got into kung fu because of Jackie Chan films because he was the big thing at the time and his style is very cinematic. And then a friend of mine's like, well, you got to check out Bruce Lee. And I remember the first time I watched a Bruce Lee movie and I'm like, that was all right. His style's just very different. Bruce Lee's a less cinematic style, I'll say. He's all about speed and power, but I've really come to appreciate what he brings to the screen as I watched all his films.
Bruce Lee, you know, I've always been aware of him. I really can't say I'm a fan. Not because I watched his stuff and didn't like it. It's just that I've never really sat down and made it a point to go through his work.
He doesn't have a whole lot. I mean, he only did like 3-4 real films before passing.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a long list of IMDb, but it's a lot of TV overseas and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously always known who he is, but you bring up Jackie Chan. That always kind of turned me off. I think I've mentioned it before. Like, people are always like, yeah, I love Jackie Chan. And did you know he does his own stunts? And I'm always like, yeah, he also does his own acting.
Watches Chinese Hong Kong films where you can't really tell what his acting's like. I think he's more comfortable when he doesn't have to speak English. And I call it mime-like acting. He's just funny. He's almost like a clown, the way he moves and everything. But yes, his English stuff, when he's got to speak English and try to act that way, not always the best.
And with Bruce Lee, I mean, I guess I was surprised, having really sat down and watched this movie for the first time and really taking it in, how much of a presence he has. He has, people call it like the it factor, but he has that. There's something just charming and something oozing out of him that just makes you want to follow along with whatever he's doing.
I got into martial arts films because of Jackie Chan. When Rumble in the Bronx came out in the mid-90s is when I really started paying attention.
That was a big deal for our generation, yeah.
I'd seen some other martial arts films, including some directed by Robert Klaus here. He had done some Cynthia Rothrock direct-to-video films, China O'Brien.
I have not seen that one.
Yeah, there was a period in the 90s where Cynthia Rothrock was a name, and I decided to rent her movies to find out why, and I still don't know why she was a name. But I'd seen that, and I'd seen some of Brandon Lee's stuff.
Does he have more than The Crow?
Showdown in Little Tokyo. I give that a strong brown arrow. So Jean-Claude Van Damme, these were the kung fu people I watched, the martial artists. But when I'm considering Steven Seagal a martial artist, I know he has a closet full of belts, but he's got nothing on Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan opened my eyes to a world of martial arts. But around that same time, I was rewatching all of the Adam West Batman shows. There was some network that started, I can't even remember the name, it's gone now, TV network. It was rerunning all of the Batman shows, and I was reliving those. And then they did the crossover with the Green Hornet episode.
Kato.
And they started showing the Green Hornet. And I'm like, oh, I've heard of this Bruce Lee and Batman's good. Let me try this Green Hornet. I could not do it. So my opinion of Bruce Lee was pretty negative. I'm like, God, that was a terrible show. But then I was channel flipping one day and started watching a movie. About 5 minutes in, didn't know what it was. There was some kung fu fighting with a man battling some cooks who were attacking him with meat cleavers. Without even knowing it, I'd stumbled into Dragon, the Bruce Lee story that I put in my book. It introduced me to Bruce Lee's life, his immigration, his entering the entertainment industry. And so from there, I started checking out a couple of his movies. And I bought a couple that were cheap DVDs. I can't remember what they were. There were like two movies for $2 at Big Lots.
It gets super confusing because Enter the Dragon was the last one of his films I saw. Because I bought a box set because I'm like, oh, I could get all these Bruce Lee movies in one box set. And it's like Fist of Fury, which is actually The Big Boss. And the Fist of Fury in the US is called Chinese Connection. And there's Way of the Dragon, which is sometimes Return of the Dragon. It gets very confusing because they just slap whatever title they wanted on there.
Yeah, and so I'm not quite sure what I tried to watch, but they weren't very good, terrible dubbing. But the one Bruce Lee film I really feel I've watched, and I've watched it many times, is Enter the Dragon. And yeah, his presence on screen, like you said, Justin, is unbelievable. This guy could have been so huge had he not died so early.
And what's really interesting, you talk about that presence. He's born in the US, but moved back to Hong Kong when he's only 3 months with his parents. But when he was 18, he came back to the US, and that's when he got into the Green Hornet, and he wanted to be a star. That was his thing. He was teaching people. He had his own brand of kung fu. He came up with his own school of kung fu. He was teaching people that, but he wanted to be a star. So he had this Green Hornet thing. And then the networks were like, let's develop something for you. So they created a little show called Kung Fu, starring David Carradine. They're like, we don't actually want to go with an Asian actor. We don't know if audiences will come to that. And so he was very frustrated and went back to Hong Kong. And yeah, that's when he did The Big Boss, which up until that point in China, the biggest Chinese box office was The Sound of Music. And then Bruce Lee did The Big Boss or Fist of Fury, depending on where you're watching it. And that became the biggest one. And then he did his next film, and that became the biggest one. And Way of the Dragon, which was Chuck Norris's first credited role. They were friends. They fight in that one. All those memes that Chuck Norris is a badass. Forget it, man. Bruce Lee tears him apart, literally, like, rips his chest hair out during the fight.
Ouch.
But that got the studio's attention again. Like, oh, guys, Bruce Lee is huge. And, you know, the 70s, you think about blaxploitation and just cinema is evolving more. We're open to more stuff. And so, yeah, let's do a martial arts film. So Enter the Dragon became the first American backed by Warner Brothers martial arts film. I looked up the budget. It was reportedly $850,000, which is about $5 million in today's dollars. So it wasn't like a huge production, but it was more than any martial arts film had had up to that point.
Yeah, it really was, I think, the beginning of any kung fu craze. I mean, at the end of this movie, I sure in my head was hearing everybody was kung fu fighting, and that's because of Bruce Lee that everybody was kung fu fighting.
Oh yeah, I mean, Jim Kelly, who we'll talk about, he went on to have a brief kung fu career in blaxploitation films as Black Belt Jones, and there's some all right films with him. Don't see Black Samurai, but Black Belt Jones is pretty good. But yeah, this would start to get more acceptance for martial arts films in the U.S. And again, Lee wanted to be a star. He wanted that recognition, and it's a shame what happened. I mean, he passed away before this film, 6 days, I believe, before the film came out. I think he would have been even bigger than he is now if he had got that career. But unfortunately, yeah, he passed right before the film came out.
I don't think we're spoiling anything by saying this man was talented as a martial artist and as an actor. But looking at this film, I'm kind of surprised. I always thought one thing about Bruce Lee, same way I thought about Jackie Chan, was he did all of his own stunts. But that is actually not the case.
He did a lot of the choreography, though. He in fact, for Enter the Dragon, he did all the choreography. They showed pages of the script where they get to a scene. And I imagine it's all like a porno film where it's just like they have sex. It just said, fight scene to be choreographed by Mr. Lee.
A lot of rabbit style and doggy style with completely different meanings in both those types of movies.
Crane style and yes. I mean, so Arnie, you've seen this. Obviously, I'm a Bruce Lee fan. Justin, where are you here? You've seen this before or you haven't?
Okay, after sitting down and seeing it this time, I can say that I have seen it before. I can't exactly pin down when. I'm guessing sometime when I was a kid, it must have been on cable and my dad must have been watching it. But I have seen all the high notes in this movie before. So yes, I've seen it before, but my vision of this movie was painted by something before I'd ever seen it. And I wonder if you guys remember Kentucky Fried Movie. There was a segment in Kentucky Fried Movie. It's a spoof movie.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
I mean, it's just a bunch of non-tied together skits, but there is one skit that they keep coming back to, and it's a spoof of this. It's called Fistful of Yen. It hits all the tropes of this movie, but in almost a lovingly done send-up to this movie. You know, they over kind of did the voices not matching up with the lip sync and stuff like that, and the sound effects, I thought they were overplaying for funniness, but sitting down and watching this, it's like, oh man, they were closer to it than I thought. So my entire image of Bruce Lee and where he came from was painted by a spoof movie called Kentucky Fried Movie, which I probably should go back and watch again, because I remember that shaping a lot of my childhood.
Does the Han in that one put like a piece of fried chicken on his hand?
Yes.
Arnie, we're not going to talk about that Kentucky Fried Movie. Why don't you tell us what the plot is for Enter the Dragon?
Bruce Lee plays Lee. So this is going to be really easy for us.
I was going to call him Bruce Lee no matter what.
He's a Shaolin monk and master martial artist. He's recruited by British intelligence to go enter a fighting tournament held by Han, played by Shik Keen, and voiced by Ki Luke. Han is involved in drug dealing and human trafficking, but the Brits can't get any firm evidence. They want Lee to pretend to enter Han's tournament and gather intel. More, Lee is told Han's goons attacked and are responsible for the death of Lee's sister, Su Lin, played by Angela Mao. At the tournament are also American fighters Roper, played by John Saxon, and his Vietnam pal Williams, played by Jim Kelly. They stumble upon Han's devious acts, and when Williams tries to leave the island, Han kills him in hand-to-hand combat. Han tries to recruit Roper and hopes to recruit Lee as well, but the two men work together and take on Han's goons. Lee calls the British military to the main island while Roper fights off Han's goons. Han and Lee end up in one-on-one combat, and Han leads Lee to his Hall of Mirrors, but Han breaks the mirrors and kicks Han, causing the crime lord to be impaled on his own spear. The Brits arrive just in time for cleanup, as Han gives Roper a thumbs up and credits roll.
Now, I gotta ask, this is called Enter the Dragon. I think, what is this dragon they're entering? Is that some grand hall? The original title of this was Blood and Steel. And it was changed because Bruce Lee, in Chinese, his name, he had a bunch of different Chinese names that he went by, but they all meant dragon, little dragon, some form of dragon. So to me, Enter the Dragon, changing this and knowing that information, this is going to all be about Bruce Lee. It is Enter Bruce Lee, like Enter Bruce Lee into Hollywood, Enter the Dragon. But I was always thought growing up that Enter the Dragon, that was going to be some exotic hall that was known as the dragon or something that they would fight in.
And I've always put it in my mind that the dragon is that room of mirrors. You know, Enter the Dragon. The whole thing is entering that room at the end. That's the one thing I remembered about this movie before coming back to it, because I hadn't watched it in like 20 years before we did Mortal Kombat. But what I remembered most was John Saxon fighting martial arts, but even more, that room of mirrors.
Yeah, we'll get there, but we open up with just a little fight between Lee, I guess we'll call him. I want to call him Bruce Lee, but Lee. And I don't know if you recognize his opponent here, but if you're a martial arts fan, it's Sammo Hung, a big choreographer for martial arts film and action star. I'd seen him. He co-starred with Jackie Chan, like in Project Day and some other films. And he even starred in a movie called Enter the Fat Dragon, because that's always the joke. He's kind of portly, but he's a really good martial artist.
Yeah, he was a bigger guy, which immediately makes you think that maybe Bruce Lee is at a disadvantage if, you know, you don't know who Bruce Lee is or what movie you're coming to see. But it's an interesting little sparring fight here at the beginning, and Bruce Lee takes him out pretty easily and gets him to tap out, while this stereotypical old man, is what he's credited as, watches the master of the monks.
Yeah, I feel like this is a good intro. Like, let's get to a fight right away. You always want action at the start to get you interested. But this was all afterthought. That original script opened up with just Lee and Braithwaite sitting down talking about the mission. And after they filmed everything, Lee's like, no, I wanted to start with this fight.
Hey, I like this as an intro to the type of movie because, like I said, it's been years since I've seen this. I wasn't even sure if I had seen it all the way through. So I'm not really sure what to expect. I'm not sure if we're going to see a very serious kung fu movie with a lot of zen things being thrown out and a lot of inward inspections and a lot of wandering. So to kick off the action right away and kind of say, hey, we're not going to be afraid to be violent in a time when action movies were car chases through San Francisco and big gunfights.
Yeah, this got an R rating for its violence and some side boob.
And it got an X rating in the UK because, you know, nunchucks.
That actually got cut out. Just turtles can't have nunchucks. Bruce Lee can't have nunchucks.
But big old guns are fine everywhere else. But yeah, I like the tone that it's setting here. But then I get a little scared that it is going to be exactly what I was afraid of when we start talking to teacher and it's just fortune cookie advice left and right.
Oh, see, this, I love this stuff. And again, this was not in the original script. Lee wanted this because Lee was a teacher. There's a lot of disputes if he actually ever fought anyone publicly. If you watch that Dragon movie, there's a whole scene with him fighting some kung fu master in Oakland, but that was in closed doors, and there's different reports how that turned out. He was not like a tournament fighter. He was more of a teacher, and he had all this great wisdom. And so when he's talking about what is your style, to have no style, I love this kind of stuff. To me, this is what Bruce Lee was about, is about adaptation and using the opponent to fight the opponent. Very zen-like. And that just elevates it above more than just a typical kung fu film.
Don't get me wrong. I end up liking it. I was just afraid that that was what we were shifting into for the majority of the movie, was just going to be a string of proverbial knowledge and stuff like that. And I think it was just the right amount of this to set us on the path that we needed to move this story forward.
I found it interesting because, again, coming from really my introduction to Lee being his biopic, that this is actually the stuff he was teaching his students. He created his own martial arts style, Jeet Kune Do, and this is the kind of stuff he was trying to teach: maximum effectiveness, minimal movement, and expenditure of energy.
Yeah, if you go and watch him again, he doesn't have tournament fights, but Bruce Lee is fast. And we'll see that in this movie. He would do things like the one-inch punch, where literally it's what it sounds like. He has his fist an inch away from a person and just pushes all his momentum forward, and people go flying backwards. He was strong, he was quick, and yeah, he would just use that to look for openings to strike his opponents.
And I definitely think we see that here. His movements, I think what makes him so cool is he is so precise. He says here that he doesn't hit, his hand just hits when the opening is there. And I feel we see that. This is a time where in movies, like if you were watching television, the Dukes of Hazzard and things, people were throwing huge roundhouse punches, right? Huge exaggerated movements. And Lee is going in the opposite direction.
Well, yeah, even the Kung Fu films were like that at the time. And that's why it was harder for me to get into Bruce Lee at first, coming from Jackie Chan, where it's all very flowery and big and grand, and he is just so short burst, and it took a while for me to come to appreciate what he was bringing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like what he's saying here. He's basically saying conservation of energy, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. But the thing that tripped me up was he had a line where he's basically imparting his wisdom, and he says, we need emotional content.
Yeah, we'll see that when he's training a young kid in a little bit.
Yes. And I'm wondering if that's something that he took forward from his teacher, or if this is what he's starting to project out there as his own way.
I mean, in real life, this was his own way.
Sure.
In the film, because the stuff with the teacher was just added kind of at the last minute, because this is what Lee wanted. He wanted this philosophy. It's kind of redundant when we get to Braithwaite. We'll go over a lot of this information, because we'll find out from teacher that Han used to go to that temple, and he's turned to the dark side and brought dishonor to these Shaolin monks, and that's why teacher wants Lee to go fight this tournament that's held every 3 years on Han's Island.
I love that Bruce Lee is completely unfazed about being approached by British intelligence to go after a human trafficker, and in the middle of the conversation, he's going to be like, oh, wait, it's my turn to train Lao. You're just going to have to wait while I go train Lao.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, oh, nope, sorry, it's this other kid's turn to get my attention. And yeah, I love that. You need to have emotional content. I feel like I yell that a lot during my review of films. Like, yes, I need emotional content. But another thing he says, that a fight, it should be like a play, but serious. And I think you could find some humor in Lee when he's doing it. And he kind of does these faces. And martial arts, that's the thing. You're like expelling this energy. But for him, this is all serious. This is how you get that energy out and how you fight. And it's just a way you live and a way of life.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't ninjas. They're monks. And, you know, I tried to reconcile that with even Mortal Kombat. I don't know exactly what a Shaolin monk is, but apparently you don't want to get in an argument with one in a bar.
So, okay, you guys brought up something that I guess wasn't totally clear to me on this viewing. He had no prior engagement with Braithwaite and the intelligence agency.
It seems like Braithwaite just shows up because they know Lee has an invitation to this tournament. Again, I don't know why they pick him except Lee's the star. So, look, Warner Brothers might be behind this film, but it still feels like a B-movie. And if you go and listen to our John Carpenter Assault on Precinct 13 review, again, in B-movie, you use a lot of shorthand because you don't have the money, you don't have the time sometimes. So, yeah, I just feel like, hey, James Bond's popular right now, right? So let's kind of have a British intelligence guy and put him on a mission.
Yeah, this is totally James Bond, and I was getting a real live and let die feel out of this.
Yes. Same here. I just recently watched that. I've been watching the old Connery stuff that I missed. So James Bond was on the mind. And yeah, when ninjas show up in that one, I'm like, oh, this is the best James Bond by far. So far, the ones I've seen, there's ninjas.
Yeah, I mean, ninjas, they're both 70s films, and they have similar color palettes. They just have similar looks to them.
Yeah, they were really intentional with the color palette in this film. The producer on the commentary talked a lot about the comic strip Terry and the Pirates, and they just wanted those vibrant colors to bring out this vision of Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by how good it looked, you know, being a movie that's going on almost 45, 46 years old.
Oh, I feel so old, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't really know what to expect as far as production value goes, but I was really taken aback by how vibrant it was and how the shots were set up. It's a gorgeous looking movie for the most part.
It's filmed on location in Hong Kong.
I do love this just for the time capsule that it provides. I mean, the information is being portrayed over a reel-to-reel movie. And they have graphics and they have pictures of an autopsy. And it was just so great.
What's funny to me, though, with this conversation with Braithwaite, and this is something you could tell like the writers were really concerned over, is like, well, how do we not make this a James Bond movie where you just show up with a gun and shoot Han? Like, there's this whole convoluted conversation where Lee goes, why can't we just bring a 45 and shoot him? And they're like, oh no, he doesn't like guns because someone tried to assassinate him, so you can't even smuggle a gun. I feel like Sean Connery could have got a gun on that island.
Apparently, Bruce Lee really wanted a gun. He saw this as his James Bond film, and it was the producers who were like, no guns. The whole reason Han has a private island off British waters is to provide an excuse why he wouldn't have a gun. Apparently, when Bruce Lee is told he can't have a gun, the disgust on his face is real because he was just channeling the argument he'd had with producers.
Yeah, he was very vocal with the writers and trying to get things done a certain way. Like, again, he saw this as his chance to become a Hollywood star. And so he was putting everything into it.
Maybe his instincts were a little bit wrong. Whoever overrode him did history a favor because, like I was saying before, movie theaters were filled at this time with Dirty Harry and other car chase, gun chase movies. This sets it apart from those by not having to have that type of violence. It's a different type of violence, and it's a new, almost artistic type of violence.
It's strange, though, because they're obviously going for Bond. They're trying to give us an Asian Bond. But this movie is low budget. I know you say $5 million today, Jacob.
Oh, yeah, no, it's low budget. I agree.
I feel like you can do more with a good digital artist and $5 million today than you could back then. There's no car chases here. There's no gunplay.
They had to go to Hong Kong, film it all on location using Chinese crews. I mean, there's difficulty. There's language barriers. So not as smoothly as you could do it today.
Right. But what it forces the movie to do is actually, we've talked about it before, art through adversity. They have to do everything mano a mano with martial arts, and that is playing 100% to Bruce Lee's strengths. It isn't cool to see Bruce Lee pull a George Lazenby and pull out a gun, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, you don't want to see him shooting. And just like a Bond film, one of the big things that's important is a good villain. And they're going to set that all up with Han, who, again, we were told he was a former Shaolin monk. That's already cool to me. Like, this is the rogue, the one that left, and he's up to something shadowy. We're told that a woman's body was found offshore and what, she had OD'd on heroin.
Yeah, somebody poked her arm with a Bic pen. No, they're trying to show track marks, I'm assuming, but it was funny. You know, this whole setup was great. It's trying to be James Bond and they're trying to show off technology.
And you got O'Hara, who's this big, tall, played by Bob Wall, bodyguard for Han with a scar. They don't know how he got that scar. We'll find out. But this guy's a real martial artist that they hired. Not as cool as Oddjob, but I still like O'Hara.
I love the conceit of this island that they weren't sure who it belonged to after some certain war hundreds of years ago. But, you know, Han has taken it over now and he's running something off it. They can't be sure. But there is a little section of it that may be in dispute. So it's like it's almost a zoning issue on this island.
Yeah, it's bizarre because I don't think it ever really comes up. I thought maybe, oh, that's where the British military will be hanging out, but
sure, like a safe zone or something. But
yeah, but they do have an agent there, Mai Ling, but they've lost contact with her.
Yeah, I'm amused by how Han is into capital C crime. Drugs? Yeah, I'm doing that. Prostitution? Absolutely. Human trafficking? Sure.
Yeah, you know what? It seems more down-to-earth and real than any Bond villain who's trying to radiate gold or steal spaceships. It's, yeah, no, I just want to get rich selling drugs and hooking women.
Yeah, I mean, he has a monologue later on really playing up the idea of corruption as a product. You know, that's kind of his whole jam.
It's working for him. He bought an island.
But once we set up the villains, then we're going to set up three heroes in this that we're going to kind of follow, and we're going to get flashbacks for each of them. First, we're going to find out a little bit more about Lee. He had a sister who, I guess he knew she was dead, but he didn't know how she died.
This entire period right here, we see Lee is talking with his master there.
I mean, he's on a boat, but he's flashing back to talking to his master. He's going to flash back to what happened to his sister.
That's like 16 flashbacks.
This is the inception of martial arts films.
Yeah.
But in the flashback where he's talking to the teacher is like, oh, your sister was killed by Han's people. And then we go into the flashback to actually see it. Now, this is played by Angela Mao, and it feels like a cameo. Does anyone know Angela Mao? Is she somebody?
I don't know who she is. The producer spoke very highly of her. Like, they're like, oh, she was a great actress, great martial artist. I'm sure she had some career in Hong Kong. I'm not aware of it, though.
Yeah, I'm looking her up. She's done over 20 or 30 martial arts films.
I've probably even seen some of them. I've watched so many.
Not a lot before this were listed, though. She looks like she just got started in 1970. But this whole thing feels like a big cameo to bring another star into it, because it's a huge fight that Bruce Lee isn't even a part of. But surprisingly, Jackie Chan is.
Yeah, I heard Jackie Chan showed up in this as a stuntman, and he's just one of Han's guards. He shows up multiple times. I don't know if he dies during this fight with Su Lin, Lee's sister, but I know he shows up later on in the film as well.
He doesn't die. He gets kicked in the balls. I actually saw him this time.
Okay, lots of people get kicked in the balls.
A lot of ball shots in this movie.
I didn't know that was so acceptable in martial arts. It's like a Bond film, again, where Bond, yeah, the plot, I guess, can make sense, but it's more about the locales and the gadgets and the girls. So yeah, the fact that we're going to get another fight here, even though it's not Bruce Lee fighting, I don't need Bruce Lee in every scene. I think she's real good. I like this chase.
Yeah, absolutely. I just don't understand the stakes, because she's running from this whole gang of people. She's fighting them off. She's doing real well. And finally, she gets cornered by a group of them. Why did she kill herself?
This is my interpretation. Yeah, I think she was going to be sexually assaulted. And with, I don't want to grossly stereotype all this, but it is a common thing, especially in older Asian films, even in the kung fu stuff, there's a lot of repression of emotions when it comes to men and women. And they probably had something to do with censorship, and you just don't really show that on the big screen. And that was probably somewhat in the culture. I mean, you go watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, it's all about repressing your feelings and the effect that has on you. And so to me, the way I read this is that's just part of the culture is, yeah, it's better to kill yourself than to let yourself be violated.
See, and I didn't know if I had missed something, like maybe she had already been part of that island and had escaped and they were trying to track her down. You know, I thought there might have been more to it.
Yeah, because this was 3 years previous when the last tournament was going on, but these were just men like hanging out in Hong Kong, I guess, before the tournament started, and they ran into the Shaolin monk and Su Lin.
But Scarface was there.
Well, he becomes Scarface. We found out that Su Lin who gave him that scar. Yeah, she grabs a piece of glass or something and scars him right at the beginning of the fight.
Yep, but it ends with her, instead of succumbing to the gang that was chasing her, she takes a shard of glass and she jams it into her stomach, which I don't know would kill you instantly. I think that'd be a more of a slow, painful death.
Oh, no, that's how you do it with samurai seppuku. You take that knife and you disembowel yourself. You cut across your stomach and let your guts spill out.
Ugh.
Now, they do normally have another samurai who will cut your head off. But you got to do that part first before they'll give you the quick death.
Oh, yeah, that would hurt. I was more concerned about, even if I was to do that, I'd still be concerned about cutting my hand, because that would really hurt.
Only for a short time.
When your large and small intestines are sitting in your lap, that pain will go away very quickly in your hand.
But then we see Lee go to a gravesite, and I know he's told by his teacher to visit his mother and his sister, but we never see whose grave he's at. Is he at his mother's grave? He's talking about how this is against what you taught me. I'm just a little confused what that scene is.
Yeah, no, I took it that's his mother's grave. And we talked about this in Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13, is you just get little hints sometimes here and there in these B-movies. And yeah, this is his mom taught him to be a pacifist, not to go for revenge. Who knows? But I take it that this is his mother's grave. I think the reason they don't actually show the gravestone, this was a Muslim cemetery in Hong Kong. And I've seen shots, people have taken shots of this grave, and it's got Middle Eastern writing on it. I guess they didn't have the production money to dress it up as his mom's grave.
Yeah, they have the production value to have a gravekeeper brushing leaves, but
that might have just been someone doing their job. Like, again, all these flashbacks are taking place while the three protagonists are on these dinghies to get to the main ship to sail to the island. And this is all real stuff. Like, these were real people. They said that just push these boats around, hardly ever go on dry land. There's a whole culture that just live on these boats. And these sailors, or whatever you want to call them, they weren't even impressed that they were going to be in a movie. So this guy sweeping leaves could have just actually been someone at the cemetery Barry Hughes kept it up.
Yeah, don't have to worry about getting anybody to sign their rights away. I mean, this seems like a lot of guerrilla filming for the time.
We do have flashbacks for two other characters. Lee, I get that we've spent 20 minutes with him, and so I think it's unusual to follow him through, but then have a flashback in a flashback like this. But then the next two characters come. Did you feel like this helped connect you to those characters?
You know what? I like their backstories. Williams more than Roper. Here's the weird thing. I watched Mortal Kombat before I rewatched Enter the Dragon, and I mixed them up in my mind. I remember, oh yeah, Roper, he's like the big movie star, and he has all this luggage. He does have a ton of luggage when he's showing up, and he's going to tell Bruce Lee to like put it on the ship for him, and Bruce Lee's just going to throw it off. No, that all happens in Mortal Kombat. I mixed the two up. But Roper, I guess he's just a martial artist, because you got to get an invitation, and he's in debt to the mob, so he ran away and decided to come to this island.
I like the little bit of a flashback. It wasn't as long, obviously. It was just enough to establish him. He's playing golf with his assistant. And
again, why I thought he was a movie star, because he's got an assistant and a golf cart phone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some goons come to collect and he doesn't have it. So he decides to, you know, kung fu them to the ground. And they even make it a point to say that he's only got like $60 left in his bank account. It sets up right away that this guy is a good fighter, maybe somewhat of a lowlife, maybe somewhat of a degenerate, not that great with money, but he's having fun with life.
Yeah, he's a lovable rogue, is how I'll put it. And John Saxon, he kind of looks like a B-list Sean Connery, James Bond to me. And we're going to have a white actor, a black actor, and an Asian actor as our protagonist, because they wanted this to appeal worldwide. But John Saxon, I'm like, okay, this is the one. I know who Jim Kelly is. I know who Bruce Lee is. John Saxon doesn't know martial arts. Come on, look at this guy trying to throw these kicks. He actually does have a black belt in judo. So he did know what he was doing. He did say after 8 days of shooting fight scenes, he was exhausted and done with it.
I read that. You're talking about you knew these other guys. The one I knew was John Saxon, because he's Lieutenant Thompson in Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 3. And then when I go back and watch syndicated shows, it seems like he was a bad guy on every possible show in the 80s, sometimes multiple times. Knight Rider, A-Team, Magnum P.I., I think a half dozen appearances on Fantasy Island. So that's where I know this guy from, but I'm confused because I really don't know his career outside of television as to how he'd get this role. All I can really tell is he did some movies I hadn't heard of and a lot of television, and he must have a really good agent. And the fact that he was actually a martial artist, I did not think that. I thought both he and Jim Kelly were probably both just actors who had stunt doubles. I didn't realize that they were doing their own fights.
Oh, yeah. And again, Saxon, he's like, 8 days of this fighting stuff. I'm exhausted. I'm done. Let's do some of the acting, the drama stuff. But Jim Kelly, he got a martial arts film career because of this movie. And again, he's another real martial artist. And look, I love Bruce Lee. I love Williams in this film. Just when we get that introduction, and again, another flashback, and you get that all black kung fu studio, and it's got, you know, the Africa with the colors, with the kung fu cobra imposed over it, and everyone's got afros and headbands. Loving this 70s blaxploitation stuff.
Oh, I mean, right down to the cops. I mean, holy cow. He gets pulled over by the cops, and they're just harassing him for walking. Apparently, he's black in the wrong neighborhood or at the wrong time.
I love that after he beats them up, he just steals their car and takes that to the airport.
Talk about a sign of the times. They both call him Jig. I'm like, whoa, settle down, 1973.
I like how John Saxon calls money bread. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Look, everything is cool about this. We didn't talk about the opening theme during the credits, but the composer, Lalo Schifrin, I don't know if you know who this guy is, but did a real famous piece of music, the opening theme to Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah. I knew that name sounded familiar.
Yeah, that opening theme with all that wah guitar, just a lot of funk in it. Yeah, I'm digging how 70s this film feels.
I am loving the funk and bass and all that stuff that we're getting here. This is perfect for this type of movie and of the time.
Yeah, the way it mixes the instrumentation of Asian music with the, for lack of a better word, funk of disco, it's really of the time. I love it. I really do.
Yeah, Schifrin talked about how it was difficult because they wanted to imitate some of these Asian sounds, but he didn't have that instrumentation, so they had to take Western instruments and figure it all out. But it comes together real, like, again, great score here.
Yeah, and Jim Kelly, I really love him in this film. And you're talking about retro, that fro, right? I mean, that is something to be admired. And I'm not saying that at all in a joking way. It is just impressive. It looks honestly like the foam protector I have on the microphone in which I'm speaking right now.
Yeah, no, Bruce Lee is the reason you're going to see this one, but you're going to stay for Williams.
Yeah, and this is Bruce Lee's last completed film, but I understand Jim Kelly went and did a whole bunch of blaxploitation kung fu films. I want to see those now.
See Black Belt Jones. That's probably the best of them. I haven't seen all of them. I've seen two or three, and some of them take a real step down. But Black Belt Jones, that was his first one after this one, and really enjoy that.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, me too, because I just love his delivery of some of the lines here, everything about him. I don't know that I needed his backstory. I guess it helped drive home to me that this Black Lives Matter is been going on exactly the same for 50 years.
He gets the coolest lines. Like, we're going to find out that him and Roper were in Nam together. And as they're on this boat, again, I love just the scenery. This is real location stuff. Talk about just a travelogue almost. All this stuff on the boats. But he looks at that and he's like, I guess the ghettos are the same everywhere. Like, I just love these little lines, just like we got from Napoleon in Assault on Precinct 13, that just add a little bit of flair to this.
Yeah, they stink. It's just, and later on, some of his lines. And the fact that they're Nam buddies, that's certainly a sign of the times too.
Yeah, Nam's still going on at this time pretty much.
Yeah, they had been out of it for 6 years, and that would have been very topical. The one thing though, I think I like Williams better than Roper, because Roper, they defined him as a gambling addict, and that's all he's going to do for half this movie. Everything.
Yeah, on the boat, there's a praying mantis fight, and he makes a bet with Lee. It's very telling, though. He goes for the big mantis, because of course that's going to be the one that wins. And Lee, being the little guy, he goes for the little one, and of course he wins.
We're also introduced on the boat to some mean guy from Australia.
New Zealand!
Parsons, they say he's from New Zealand. That accent is not native New Zealand. That is an Australian accent. I lived in New Zealand. I never heard a native New Zealander with an accent that hard. This is to show you more about Lee's philosophy and his fighting style. Fighting without fighting. And he wins without fighting.
This is a great prank, right? Because you expect him to fight. We've already seen him fight. And this guy is a jerk, just being completely rude. But no, instead of fighting, he just embarrasses him. I mean, in one way, I think this is a bad move, because now he's made an enemy.
Yeah, I definitely thought this was going to come back and bite him.
Well, he's going to a tournament where he's going to have to fight people. They're all enemies.
Sure. Yeah, I was half expecting, you know, Lee to kick him overboard as he was starting to get out there. But then I was like, oh, I see what he's doing. He's going to put him on that dinghy and hang him off the back. But yeah, right, Jacob, it really does a good job of illustrating his philosophy. And it's a good character moment for Lee, who we are once again reminded this is his story. After seeing a few flashbacks about a couple other guys and some things happening on his boat, it's time to refocus on Lee and where we're going forward with this story.
And to show us that he's not just muscle, he's smart, that he can outwit an opponent as well as outpunch. And they get to the island, and what an island, my God, everything you want, food, women, later we're going to find lots of heroin.
Yeah, we get this great wide shot panning over all these different levels of fields with 300 extras that all had to sync up their kung fu to show these exercises going on Han's Island.
To different levels of success. I mean, I caught a few people in the background. It was just like, what is happening there? But the idea comes across.
It's impressive to get that many people all going, wah, at once.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, with this budget, they're not going to get a lot of reshoots, especially on crane shots and panning shots of large crowds.
And we get this big party with all of these demonstrations of two guys fighting in sumo in the middle.
Yeah, this is the B party, too. I want to know what that A party is like, as Roper says.
I think that involves putting your key in a fishbowl as you walk in. It is the 70s.
That happens here. I mean, we get our Bond girl, I guess. We get Tanya, who I don't know what she does in this film. I never know if she's good or bad, but she's got a thing with Roper.
Yeah, she's the madam of the prostitutes there. And Is she the Bond girl? There's a lot of women who come in and out of this. We're going to see Mei Ling. We're going to see Tanya. But none of them really make an impression on me, unfortunately.
With kung fu films, that's always way under the surface. But we're going to see some tit shots in this. So there are Western influences here. But yeah, Williams is going to get four girls. Roper is going to be doing his thing with Tanya. Lee, he's hooking up with Mei Ling, but I think just to get information.
That's the way I took it. At first, I was like, I thought we would have Lee declining a girl just because, you know, I find him to be an honorable, focused type of person. And when he asked about a certain girl that was at the party, I was like, wait, what's going on? Oh, that's the informant that he was shown a picture of earlier. So it was actually him being smart and having a nice way of not being held suspicious by anybody who might be keeping an eye on these guys.
And here he's kind of the anti-Bond, right? Because he is not going to have a chippy. He's not going to have one woman, let alone two. He's going to be like a monk, sexless this whole movie. He's very focused on the mission. The women are left for the others.
I'm telling you, watching so many kung fu films way back when I really got into them, it almost becomes funny about how to the lengths they go to not have the hero and the heroine kiss. It's so repressed.
I just absolutely laugh, though, in this party, because Han comes in, everybody freezes. It's like, if you remember the TV series Out of This World that had a half alien girl who could stop time.
Oh, yes, where you touch your fingers, and I would touch my fingers all the time as a kid, hoping that I had that power.
I still do it now when I'm editing a show and the deadline's approaching. It doesn't work. But that's what it was like when Han comes in, because the sumo wrestlers freeze frame. They don't move.
Yo, no, the whole room freezes. There's all these just birds everywhere, and it just seems everything. It's all show. It's just, again, it's a Bond villain. He needs to be powerful. You need to fear him. So the fact that this man walks into a room, again, just this gorgeous set, these gold lion statues, these sumo wrestlers with their, I don't know what their thongs are called, but just bright purples, just beautiful looking.
Yeah, and he's escorted by a cadre of beautiful women who we find out real quickly, they use their earrings as assassin arrows. And so in the demonstration, Han is throwing up apples and they're knocking him out of the air with their arrow-tipped earrings.
And I like the one who can blow the earring enough to spear an apple. That's a hell of a breath.
That's Mei Ling, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it goes right to Lee.
All right. I'm enjoying the film. I'm enjoying the vibe. I'm enjoying the grandeur. We're 40 minutes in. Are you starting to kind of itch for some real kung fu, or is it me?
Yeah, I think it might be. I am just loving the locations we're being seen. I could have watched those guys just float around in that seaside city a little bit longer. I think this movie looks great for especially the budget they had. And yeah, we've gotten some great fights, but I've enjoyed the visuals as well. I don't feel a time lag.
I'm right there with you. I'm enjoying everything on screen and kind of also as a time capsule, too. I'm enjoying what at the time was modern. I mean, the quarters they're in William's room, he has Black Power fists and
yes.
Jimi Hendrix posters on the wall and wallpaper that I swear to God my aunt had until 1985. I mean, it's just such a moment in time, you know, all the earth and yellows and browns everywhere.
I guess when I feel it is when we get to see Williams picking his four women. You know, he's got to conserve his energy. So just four women to be with.
Oh, I love that. See, I could have gone with more Williams. Just he's so fun to watch.
I like him, but I think I would have just liked to moderate it a little bit more. I didn't need to know the sexual proclivities of both Roper and Williams.
It is the 70s. And, you know, like Jacob said, this is meant for a Western audience, so they got to start throwing some of this stuff in for people who are probably feeling a little bit too on the foreign side at this point of the movie.
Yeah, but we are going to get to the actual tournament the next day. That was my thing watching Mortal Kombat. The game is about a tournament. How do you make that into a film? It seems like the tournament, that's the least interesting part. I think about Karate Kid. Yeah, that's about a tournament, but it's all about the drama building up to that tournament. It's not actually about the tournament.
Yeah, it's about training for the tournament. At least here, we're getting some sex.
It's more risque than I expected it to be, while Lee himself is more chaste. But when we get to the fighting, my appetite is whetted for it.
Before we get to the actual tournament, Lee is told by O'Hara that you need to wear the specified gi that they're supposed to wear. I guess it's that yellow one everyone else has, but Lee wears a brown outfit. Is that his Shaolin outfit and showing his solidarity with them?
I don't know, because we see everybody pretty much in a white gi training.
The white ones, yeah, those are Han's men. I think those in yellow, those are the tournament fighters.
Yeah, that's the way I take it too, because they have the logo that you can see on the flags on a patch on their chest. I kind of think that those were the invited tournament goers.
And I guess we're going to find out that all the tournament goers are really, they don't realize it, but they're on the world's most harsh version of The Apprentice. They're all there to be picked for a job. And so I guess they're already wearing the company uniform.
Apparently. I mean, that's one thing that this movie and Mortal Kombat don't really give us is any framework of rules or what to expect from this tournament. Is it a fight to the death?
I think we'll find out later what this tournament's all about. It's really a recruitment fair for Han. He's looking for people to work with his operation. We'll find out with Roper. He wants him to work the American arm. So I think this is really, you know, a way to bring the most badass people in front of you and then try to make little side deals as this tournament's going on. This is all a ruse.
Sure, but I guess what I'm saying is it's not really implicitly laid out as to why anybody would accept an invitation. Like, I can maybe read into Lee's motivations as an honorable guy that he might be going to defend his honor.
We know Lee is there working for British intelligence. Braithwaite sent him there, but his teacher also want him to go there. But if you're a kung fu fighter and there's a tournament and you can be the best in the world, I guess you show up. I don't really question that. Like, there's a tournament. If that's the thing you're into, yeah, you want to win.
And there's got to be some money at it or Roper wouldn't be there.
Right.
Well, he's making his own way there. He's hustling people.
Yeah, he's side betting everywhere, right? And even trying to fix it a bit, he has a little side bet with Williams at one point.
Yeah, we'll see. Williams is going to fight off against Parsons. And again, we know Parsons is the awful guy and we want to see him get beat up. So yeah, we want Williams to do that to him. But we see Roper. Yeah, he's making bet with another gentleman there.
Yeah, I don't feel that for the way he was built up with the bit in the dinghy, Parsons, this is pretty much his big moment, is getting beaten up by Williams.
I'm just shocked there's a New Zealand kung fu person at this huge tournament. It's a tiny place, and even less people in 1973.
Yeah, you're right, Artie. It almost feels like they needed something on the boat to have a character building moment for Lee. And then once you get to the island, it's like, well, we've got enough bad guys. We can dispatch this one right off the bat. We don't need him to follow through the rest of the story.
They have a lot of bad guys because we do have Parsons. We're going to be talking about O'Hara, who was the one set up by Braithwaite. And really, it seems like the biggest bad guy is Bolo, and he's not even introduced.
Bolo. Yeah, Bolo, who is for real Chinese Mr. Universe. Like, this guy is huge. This is the Arnold Schwarzenegger of China.
He is big.
And he fights dirty. He picks people up. He breaks backs and drops them on their head.
But that's not who Roper's fighting in this one with the 8-3 odds, right? Because after Williams takes out Parsons, Roper's fighting somebody. I did everything I could to find this guy's name, and I just find him like tournament competitor.
I don't know. It was the guy from Argentina or Soviet Union. Who knows?
Hell, I don't know. But the guy who Williams is betting with, is he the Asian from Germany? Because he has got the Hitler stash.
I think he's Japanese. The Japanese did have that kind of mustache because of, well, I don't know if it's because of their alliance with Germany, but I do know it was a fashionable thing in Japan at one point.
He also had some pretty thick Coke bottle glasses on. Maybe he just didn't see that part of his lip when he was shaving.
You missed the divot.
But yeah, this is the kind of stuff that makes it fun for me. I want to see some great choreography, but yeah, just these little character moments that Williams and Roper are teaming up together to just hustle the other people there and make some money off of them.
What's interesting to me is how well the fights come across as kinetic, despite a, honestly, lack of cinematic technique. Maybe it's because, like you said, Jacob, there were some communication issues and various crews, Chinese and American, but I like the look of this film, but when it comes to the fights, I kind of feel that the cinematographer just sat back and did one shot and then did a second angle, and the editor, it almost feels in certain cases like it was edited with a machete, but it still works. It really is exciting.
There are shots that I recognized from other Bruce Lee films. I don't know if necessarily they were used in other kung fu films, but you'll get these shots where it's the martial artist facing the camera and just like throwing punches right at the camera and kicks to just make you feel like you're the one being attacked. And I know that's something Bruce Lee used in his other films.
Yeah, that's a technique that doesn't age very well, because I mean, it's just a lot of air punches right into the lens of the camera in a few scenes here.
It's funny, Lee actually hurt himself because he had to pull his kicks. Like, he hurt his groin in this film because I guess you use different muscles when you have to stop your leg from actually making a connection to the person. So he got injured because he couldn't actually kick people.
But really, these fights are over pretty quick. I like that Roper takes a beating just to get the odds up, and three hits and that guy is down. But yes, one of them is to the groin.
Yeah, there's so many groin shots in this. It's painful to watch.
We've talked about it and we sense that Han is a bad guy. We've been told by Braithwaite that there's something bad is going on here. But up to this point, we haven't really seen anything. This first day of the tournament, everything seems to be pretty normal. It is a tournament. They go out there, they have their bouts and whatnot.
It's that night Lee's going to go out. This is where he becomes James Bond and he's going to go sleuth around. He gets got a rope and he finds like a secret entrance to an underground lair.
Yeah, he ninjas around a little bit and he walking the grounds, which is prohibited. We find out because Williams,
he needs some fresh air after four women.
Right. He's going to let the stank out of there. I mean, it's just...
he ain't going to follow nobody's rules.
Hey, this is night two. He might have gone up a few numbers. I mean, now he's celebrating a win. But yeah, he goes out for a smoke or something, and Lee is out there. I love that he is so silent. He is walking 1 to 2 yards behind somebody and that not heard.
Yeah, but we don't find out a whole lot. I feel like this is to propel, to escalate the action when we get to the next day, because we're going to find out Han knew someone is out there because guards got beat up and Williams was seen out there. So he's going to come under suspicion. But first, we got to see Bolo, what Bolo could do, because those guards are going to get a punishment here.
Yeah, this is our introduction to Bolo. And I think this is one of the best villain introductions I've seen in film. The way he comes out so big and beats up the guards really quickly, and off screen you just see him make this face and hear this cracking sound.
Yeah, he doesn't beat him up, he kills him. Like that, the one where he reaches down and like bends the guy's head back, and then you just see his face and hear that neck snapping.
Oh yeah, he folds one guy in half. He's pretty brutal. He is murdering these failed guards, and one guy tries to run away and the crowd throws him back, and he I guess he tries to go out with a little bit of honor. He decides, well, I'm here, I'm going to try to take a shot, but nope, Bolo makes quick work of him too.
And we'll get to our next fight. We'll finally get to Lee's turn, I guess, in the tournament. He's going to take on O'Hara. And I do love this. It is a pretty quick fight, but you really get to see what Lee's style is all about here.
I have one nitpick with this movie. At the beginning, I mentioned that Lee takes a break from Braithwaite to train Lao. What does he tell Lao? Never take your eye off your enemy, even when you bow. What does Bruce Lee do? He's checking his shoes to see if they're tied. I mean, that bow.
He's looking at Han, and that's what distracts him.
No, he's looking straight down in the bow.
Yeah, I had the same thought, Arne. I'm like, look eye, always look eye. What is happening here?
But yeah, you see those just short, quick burst punches, and those, they didn't make connection, but when he does that kick, we'll see O'Hara, he'll break those bottles and lunge at Lee, and then Lee, they actually go into slow motion for this kick, and Bob Wall, the actor who played O'Hara, he said, just really kick me. We got to make this look real. Kick me as hard as you can. I'm not going to move. So when that guy flies back and takes out like six other guys with him, that was all real. Like Lee really kicked him and knocked him back.
It was apparent in some of these scenes that they were really making contact in some of these.
Lee actually cut his hand open on one of those broken bottles. He just got too close and got caught by it when he was fighting O'Hara here.
Wow. There are risks to be taken. And, you know, I mentioned he doesn't do all his own stunts, but I don't think Jackie Chan does either, because there's just something, you can't lose the star of the film. There's certain things that maybe they could do but are too dangerous to do. So here, yeah, it's still a good fight. I think O'Hara was built up a little bit too much, though, to just to be taken out in this fight.
This is the big revenge fight, you know. This is the guy who led the gang that killed Lee's sister. So the fact that I guess see Bruce Lee do his Bruce Lee thing here, take this guy out. He was all show anyway.
And it's also Bruce Lee's coming out party to everybody here. I mean, it's like, whoa, this little guy is the real deal. I mean, you can see it in Han's eyes. He was really impressed with what he had just seen, even though he just lost his main henchman.
But this is where the plot, I think, really starts to kick in. Like a good Bond film, you don't want to be told the whole plot right at the beginning. You want that to unfold. And I think about Goldfinger, about how, oh, you're going to steal from Fort Knox. No, you're really going to radiate it, but that comes much later. And we get that here. We think it's some kind of tournament. We know something's up. That's why Lee is sneaking around. But now Han has called Williams to his chambers, and we're going to find more about what's happening on this island.
Yeah, Han knew who was sneaking around. When he gave his big speech, he's like, it doesn't matter who was out, because they were making an example of the bad guards, but he knows it's Williams.
Yeah, but Williams wasn't the one that beat up the guards. Williams was just getting a breath of fresh air after being with four ladies.
You're just going to mention those four ladies as often as possible.
Who doesn't want to be Williams? That's all I'm saying.
But he was out, and the reason things go bad is because he won't turn in who he saw. I'm not positive he knows who he saw.
No snitching, man. You do not snitch.
I'm not sure who he knows who he saw, though. I mean, it was at a distance. He saw Spider-Man.
Yeah, he calls him like the human fly. I think he knew, but he's from the hood. You don't snitch.
Especially to this guy who, he has a fake hand, right? That's the whole thing?
Well, this is where we're going to find that out. Yeah.
It's just, it seems like both his hands move. He was eating fruit with it, and
I noticed that continuity is not great sometimes in this film.
It was an idea they came up with halfway through, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if he had a fake hand?
The producer said he was also in charge of continuity, and it was not his strong suit.
I love how when the guards come in, he's like, you're right out of a comic book. They're calling out the trope they're using. I appreciate it more when a film calls out, hey, we're being silly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we see Han actually has a screw-in metal hand, which probably hurts to get hit with because it looks pretty solid. Might be lead or steel or something.
A lot of Bond villains, I think, oh, they're just the ones pulling the strings and they have henchmen because they can't fight. Han can fight. Like this actor, he can't speak English really good. That's why he's been dubbed by someone you could actually understand. But this dude can fight. He's a real martial artist. And when he starts attacking, I mean, he's a brutal fighter. And did you notice? I think I found John Woo's inspiration. There's birds all over in this movie, but when Williams and Han are fighting, there's these bird cages and they get broken open. There's like doves flying around.
Not only that, but they get thrown into the next room.
Yes, the opium den. That's all 60s psychedelic.
Yeah, they got thrown into an Andy Warhol movie for a quick minute.
Okay, this is the funniest thing that I learned from the commentary. So they're like, in Hong Kong, you cannot get a real female Hong Kong actress to play a prostitute, to paint their face, because that's seen as being a prostitute. And these women, they have their faces painted like they're hippies. They actually went to strip clubs and just hired dancers and had to pay them by the hour. They're like, this was a very expensive scene to film.
Now we know where the four women came from, but it felt a little 60s to me. It really felt hippie psychedelic when they went in that room.
It was very shagadelic.
A little bit of a 60s hangover here 3 years after the decade had ended. But this is also where the stakes of the movie actually jump up quite a bit. We actually lose Williams here.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he dies originally. We see him, I'm like, oh, it looks like he's defeated. Is he still alive when we see him strung up?
Oh no, he was supposed to be dead. But what happened was this was going to be Roper. And Williams was going to live throughout the film. When John Saxon got the role, because he was a black belt, he wouldn't take it unless Williams got killed and Roper got to live. So,
yeah. But he gets it, and this is where the plot really starts to develop. Next thing we know is Roper's getting called in to come see Han. And he's told to put his head on the guillotine.
I like the tour. That's Han's own hand, right? That he's got on display. And
yes, that skeleton hand. I love. Yeah, you got all these different hands that he's used over the years. And he's petting a white kitty again because James Bond. But yeah, we see a skeleton hand. And like, yeah, he makes a reference to it. That's obviously his old hand.
He says, oh, it's a souvenir. It's like, that is really strange. But yeah, the cat on the guillotine, the cat's going to die, right? I really thought.
Oh my gosh, my girls were watching this with me. They love animals in general, but especially kitty cats. They were almost in tears. I'm like, guys, don't worry. They're not going to do it. I didn't remember how this scene played out. I'm like, you could close your eyes if that's going to make you feel more comfortable, but nothing's going to happen to the kitty cat. You never hurt the kitty cat in a film.
Never say never. I wasn't sure which way this is going to play out.
I had to reassure him.
So explain to me what's going on here. I'm not quite sure if Han is actually trying to recruit Roper at this point and just seeing how much he can tell him before Roper's like, well, I'm not going to help you out or whatever. I'm not sure what the whole plan is here other than to have a conflict before we get to the main conflict.
No, I think he's legitimately recruiting him and he's like, okay, you're going to do what I say? You're going to put your head on this guillotine? Or are you going to trust me to not have the axe come down while you're taking the cat off of it? It's just a test of trust.
But he didn't trust him and he took him down into the inner workings of his lair anyway.
He reached out to get that cat. He was risking both of his hands.
Okay.
I like when he says that the cat only has 8 lives left, but straight out of a Bond movie, the guillotine, it may not even have been able to fall. It was really an elevator.
Yeah. They go down into where they manufacture heroin, we're going to find out. And not just that, they what, drug up girls so they could be sold as sex slaves?
Yeah, that's the plan. They make them heroin addicted and then sell them for human trafficking.
But like in a very scientific way. I mean, it's not like they're just like giving them pills. Like there's nurses on duty to like inject them and keep them at different stages.
I like that when the villain, they're doing this awful stuff, but it's very like clinical. And it does feel like how you'd go about a James Bond plot where, yeah, you have this grandiose lair and you're just cooking heroin down there and you have nurses applying the right amounts to these women to just keep them dazed and confused.
They have control rooms with alarms and phones. I'm loving the shift in tone from the ancient ruins of this outside castle and Han's lush office living, and now all of a sudden we're in caves with industrial flooring and walls.
Yeah, I'll say this. We were doing this because of Mortal Kombat. When I watched that, it felt like that was just about the tournament because the stakes of the tournament was, does Earth get to survive? And you get like really weird scenes, like all of a sudden there's a fight in a forest. I don't even know why that happens. And this, yeah, there's a tournament, but that's all for show. There's an actual plot here. There's an actual scheme going on.
Hey, that's about ownership of Earth, man.
Yeah, it's just, if I feel like that's the A plot, but you got to have some twist. You got to have something come up. So I like that Han, yeah, he is a Bond villain and he's selling drugs.
Yeah, I do like this as a plot. It takes it back because when we got to the island, we kind of let go of why Lee was sent there. What's interesting to me is Lee isn't really finding out anything. We're discovering this through Roper and Williams.
Yeah, Williams is tied up. I thought, like, is that a piranha pit? Is it an acid pit?
It looks like a lagoon, but I don't see piranha. I don't see sharks.
Yeah, no. You would expect that. Maybe they just didn't have the money.
They couldn't do the Austin Powers and just, like, put air in the water to make it like piranha coming to eat?
Did you want some ill-tempered sea bass or whatever they use in that film? I don't know. They just kind of drop him into water to show Roper that they mean business. They drop Williams and we see his bloody body there.
Yeah, I was half expecting a skeleton to pop up or something. Yes.
But that means Lee gets to sneak around again the next night. He's not talking to Roper. Again, we have these three protagonists, but they're not really communicating, working together to expose this island. Lee's doing his own thing.
Yeah, I thought the death of Williams would be a galvanizing moment that would bring Roper and Lee together, where Roper would go, Lee, this guy screwed up.
It's weird. Lee is just going to go sneak around again and send off a telegram or Morse code message.
He finds the women first. He needs evidence. And he finds a snake, first of all.
Okay, real cobra that they said they milked the venom, so he couldn't get poisoned, but I gotta imagine that bite would still hurt. But this is, again, Lee demonstrating his speed. Really catches that cobra. And I thought at like one point later on, he's gonna be like pulling it out of the bag and throwing it in a room and stepping on it to hold it in place. I thought, oh, that's gotta be fake. No, real cobra the whole time.
He slaps the snake. Like twice. I'm like,
yeah, which I guess is a thing snake handlers actually do, according to the producer, but that's crazy. Like, he was willing to do this.
Yeah, that was absolutely nuts. But it's funny that the snake was just sitting there in the same place that he had gone in the night before.
Yeah, so I guess that's their security. They're like, oh, someone crawled down this hole the night before. We'll put a snake on it.
Well, they killed the guard, so
you got to use a snake now? How do you keep the snake in place there, though?
Lots of mice. But yeah, Lee goes in and finds Star Trek-like jail cells with plexiglass walls and drugged up women and actual nurses, like Nurse Ratchet dress nurses with hats and everything, giving the heroin.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of men locked up. I don't understand this. They say something like, these are derelicts. I don't know if they're just walking around the island and they've gathered them up. What are you going to do with a drug addicted dude? Are you going to sell them off for cheap manual labor? I don't understand why they have a bunch of men locked up, except it makes a convenient army at the end of the film.
Like you said, B-movie, you don't have to read into everything. We just need to know that there's people being imprisoned here as well. Because after all, Han has said, it's really just about corruption. It's the corruption yes. business.
It's good in a recession market like the 70s had, you know, in a down economic climate. Corruption.
But this is, you get a real good action scene with League. He's going to use like a bow staff and sticks, nunchucks. Apparently, I don't know if you noticed this earlier in the film, there's a guard that has nunchucks. And he accidentally hits one of the statues and it just dongs. And then he just walks away. And it's like, why did he do, was that a mistake? And they just kept it in the film.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's really weird. On the commentary track, they're like, oh no, American audience had never seen nunchucks before. They didn't know what they were, so we had to demonstrate that they were solid wood. So we had to hit them against that statue and to show them that these were hard and they could hurt you. They just weren't soft like padded things.
I think once you start seeing people get hit with them, you'll get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see again. Lee, he's going to start off with a bow staff and beat up a bunch of people. And then he gets the two sticks and starts beating. When he gets those nunchucks, Arnie, I know you had a lot of problems with those Sean Connery Bond films when they'd speed up footage. When he's got these nunchucks, this is not sped up. This is real-time speed.
Oh, I can tell. I mean, I've seen nunchucks used in real life. I know how fast those things can move.
That's why everyone hits themselves in the balls with them when in movies.
It reminded me, though, of that scene in Indiana Jones, because Lee is doing this complete demo of how nunchucks work.
You're waiting for someone to shoot him?
Yeah, the other guy just pulls out a sword. I'm like, that's almost as good. And you know what? If Han wasn't afraid of guns, somebody would have shot him.
Yes. But this is where Lee shines, using these different weapons, using the nunchucks. This is a weapon he mastered.
Very impressively.
Yeah. And honestly, I understand the weaponry and things, but when he defies gravity, he does this one kick. He's fighting the guards. He leaps in the air, kicks one, and then kicks the other, and then gets back to the ground. That is impressive. They have to show it in slow motion just so we can see all of his movements. And then he kills them, though. He goes bolo. He gets that facial expression, and we hear the crack. He's breaking their necks.
Yeah, that was another Lee thing. You wouldn't see him kill the guy, but you'd see him stomp that foot down, and you could tell he's twisting it to break the guy's neck or whatever.
He also has a very good way of putting a look on his face that it's almost remorseful and respectful for the dead now. You know, it's not like he's getting joy out of taking life. It's out of necessity. All of that's just in his facial expression.
This is a real voice work here. They don't bring someone in to dub him. He could speak English, but where his acting really shines is not when he's delivering lines, but yeah, these facial expressions, the body language. But he gets caught. He gets trapped in one of Han's. All these trap doors come down and he does not escape. He gets that message off to British intelligence, but doesn't escape the lair.
Yeah, and the Brits do not move fast enough, right? I mean, by the time they get there, everything's over.
Well, yeah, the guy's like having, I don't know, in England, they have like tea at, I think this is the next day because we'll see Lee brought out by Han the next day to fight to the death. So yeah, maybe this is breakfast tea. I'm not sure, but yeah, Braithwaite's in bed stirring his tea and then notices a message. And he's like, this came in a half hour ago. Why didn't you tell me?
He wants the prime minister awoken. I don't care who he's with. Probably with a mistress, the way this movie is going. And also I like that Braithwaite said, well, we aren't going to come. No, we don't do that. Someone will come, not us. That instills me with confidence.
Yeah.
It ends up being a couple helicopters.
But this is the big climax here. We were told that Lee and Roper are going to have to fight to the death. They refuse, so we get Roper versus Bolo. And does Roper just knock Bolo, like punch him in the ball so hard he dies?
Yes.
That was my question.
I actually rewound it to try to figure out why Bolo died in this fight.
I'm pretty sure he was hitting the cock so hard, it killed him.
Yep.
Is that a thing? I mean, I know it super hurts. It feels like you wish you were dead when it happens.
Like we said before, there's quite a few crotch shots in this movie, and a fatal fatal crotch shot is probably the best way for Bolo to go out.
I did Google this.
Okay, good. I knew you would.
You could kill someone from hitting them in the testicles, but it's usually protracted internal or external bleeding.
No, they're hurting just thinking about this. We got to move on. But yeah, this is now all the guards, all the people in the white geese come to fight Roper, and we get to see Lee fighting multiple combatants here, something you're always waiting for. The one-on-one stuff's fine, but yeah, you always want to see him when he's outnumbered and got to take everyone on.
And in somebody being smart as far as filmmaking goes, there's a lot of nice contrast between the good guys and the bad guys. And here it's kind of switched up. The bad guys are already wearing white. The good guys have been wearing black.
Myling frees the prisoners. Yeah, and you're right, Justin. They're in their black outfits, so you could tell them apart. Good visual storytelling.
Yeah, easy to follow.
But we got to know what's going to happen to Han, and we see Han here finally bust out. Like, this is the image to me when I think of Enter that Dragon, that bear claw or whatever that thing is that he puts on. It's got some fur, it's got three claws sticking out, and he starts going after Lee.
It's pimping. When I think bear claw, I'm usually thinking of a pastry, but here...
No, he's not attacking with a donut.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine in the 1970s, something like this was really cool and unique, but the industrial designer in me is like, okay, so they took a garden claw, jammed it into a 2x4, and then dipped it in dog hair. But no, I mean, I understand what they're going for here.
Look, what I appreciate this, we've talked about Bond a lot. I feel like Han... he would have taken Bond out because Han's able to get a shot. He'll get some more shots in later on Lee, but he's able to scratch his face with that thing. Han's a good villain. He's not just about surrounding himself with henchmen. He could fight too.
You know, I mean, I make fun of the look of the thing, but I appreciate the intent of it here. It's a cool device.
It's out of a comic book, and I'm glad it is.
It's a neat way to up the scare factor of this villain.
The music here goes a little bit darker, too, when Lee has some claw marks on him and he stops and tastes his own blood.
Yeah.
The music sounds almost like it's switched to a horror film.
Yeah, you get some real interesting strings here, especially when Lee and Han, they go inside the fortress here and... Han jams that claw, gets stuck in like a piece of wood, so he's got to break the glass. He goes into that armory room and gets his Wolverine claws.
I took that as where Street Fighter got its weapon for Vega. It looks just like it.
Oh, true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, upon closer inspection, it is, you know, a couple kitchen knives in a block, but that ups the game from the bear claw.
There is a kick during this fight, before they go into the mirrored room, where every time I gasp out loud, and it's got to be like a dummy for Han, but Bruce Lee does this kick that is so fast, so violently hard, and you just see that torso jerk off camera. I'm like, oh, he just took his head off with that kick. I love that one shot.
I know what you're talking about. It's jarring at first. It's like, whoa, that's a dead person, but nope. You're right, it must have been a dummy, but Han gets up and continues fighting through the office, and all of a sudden, there's a secret entrance that spins around and reveals a mirror room. This is where I realized I have seen this movie, and this is the iconic moment that I think most people are gonna remember visually about Enter the Dragon.
Oh yeah, that bear claw in the mirrored room, that is Enter the Dragon, and this was not planned. This was not written into the script. The producers and the writer and Bruce Lee, they're all at some Asian restaurant in Hong Kong, you know, sitting discussing the film, and one of them had to get up to go to the bathroom, and they're walking down this hall, and there's just mirrors everywhere. And they go back, and they get Bruce Lee, they get the other people, they're like, look at that. We got to do a room that's like this and just make it all mirrored. And especially for the 70s, I'm thinking about how are they going to film that? Everything's mirrored. You got to have a camera somewhere. I never see the camera in any of the shots.
Yeah, I looked at that. I really wondered about the placement of the mirrors because you don't see too many clear reflections either. You don't feel like you're seeing Lee in the mirrors so much as you see refraction, which makes me wonder, why is it so hard for Lee to find Han? And Han comes up behind him and like scratches him on the back and just ducks. He's like now at Lee's feet and Lee can't find him.
This is such a cliche, the mirrored room that you're fighting in and you punch someone and it's just the reflection. I mean, Batman the Killing Joke even has a scene like this in that comic book. I'm like, can it really be that hard to spot someone like in a mirrored room? I've never been in a fun house where they have rooms like this, but people on the set said they would get motion sickness from this, and every few hours they'd all just have to go out to reorient themselves and get their balance because it is very disorienting. disorienting being in this room that's just all mirrors and you're just seeing reflections everywhere.
Yeah, and at a time well before computer graphics are going to be filling screens, they get some really cool effects here. Some of these skinnier mirrors where as Bruce walks by it, it's almost like looking through vertical Venetian blinds.
Oh yeah, there's some great shots where you just see like multi-layered Bruce Lees in these mirrors and just really cool effects. And again, that score, it's just kind of ethereal and yeah, haunting.
But yeah, to Arnie's point, in real life, I don't think it'd be that hard to find somebody in this room. I think from a visual standpoint, it's doing the job.
It blows my mind that this wasn't planned, because early on when Lee is talking to Teacher, when they're dispensing all this wisdom, Teacher says, destroy the image and you will break the enemy. Because I think this is a 70s film, an older film, they're going to have to remind us that that was said. I didn't need it. I remembered it because I wrote that down. I'm like, oh, that's going to come back later. That's like the pivotal thing that's going to help Lee figure out how to defeat Han here. And it, sure enough, they have the voiceover, destroy the image and you will break the enemy. So he just starts smashing everything.
I like that. I wish we hadn't needed the voiceover of, oh, my teacher said this, though. Like,
exactly. It's an old film, and they have to do that to remind you.
Yeah, and honestly, we have to remember, I'm actually judging this like high art, and it has been chosen for historical significance and preserved in the Library of Congress, so it is that. But the people who make this, you gotta think they're making an exploitation film that they think people are gonna half look up that while smoking a joint at a New York rundown theater in the 70s.
No. They wanted this to be a big international film. Arnie, you always talk about whatever the production budget is, double that because of marketing. Again, the reported budget of this was $850,000. A clear number that they've stated is they spent $1 million marketing this thing. They wanted this to be huge and to bring Lee out to the world, to the West, to bring Kung Fu movies out to the West. This isn't something they just thought people would be smoking a joint during. They wanted this to be a big deal.
Okay, I just thought it was kind of like Disco Godfather and Maniac.
No. That's a very different level of filmmaking.
But this final kick, this is, again, an amazing Bruce Lee mid-air kick to take out Han and impale him on his own spear. Despite having killed others, Lee does not intentionally kill Han.
Maybe. I just love the imagery here of Han on that spear and then Lee leaves and like that door just spinning around with Han stuck to it.
So many horror movies have ripped that off too, including Hellraiser with the spinning pillar with the body on it. That image has been taken again and again of the corpse just still moving but dead, spinning in circles like that. It's haunting, and it really is a great finality to what's been a visually awesome spectacle fight here. And I didn't even realize the spear was in the door, and Lee just kind of walks through.
Yes, that's how they initially found it. That spear was thrown, and then Han ran in there. But what's weird to me, so Lee's going to leave. He's defeated Han. We see the military flying in, of course, too late. The inmates and Roper have saved the day. We see Roper. We know he had a thing for Tanya, the blonde woman, in this. I don't really know what her role is, but she's lying there dead. It's a weird cut. I don't know why they had to kill her. I don't know why she couldn't end up with them. Maybe she was really that bad. But it's just weird. He like looks over at her body and gives this remorseful look.
That was so weird. You barely even see her, and I barely even remembered her.
Yeah, they made a big deal about getting this actress and this character, and she does nothing in this film.
That was a little jarring. What are they portraying here? Just it's a clean break, good guys win? Is that the idea?
I guess, but I never knew if she was really that bad, but I guess she was because she helped Han.
But she could have just been addicted to smack he put her on and human trafficked. I mean,
just a little human trafficking on the side. No big deal.
Maybe she was good in bed and that's why Roper will miss her.
Well, how will we miss this movie? Justin, Jacob, do you recommend Enter the Dragon? Justin.
When we first started talking about doing this one, I got excited because I was like, you know what? I'm not sure if I'd seen it, and getting to sit down and actually have a night dedicated to actually knowing I'm watching Enter the Dragon and taking it in for the first time as an adult, that was something to look forward to. And I gotta say, I wasn't disappointed. At first, I had a little bit of a rocky start with it. I said earlier on how I was a little afraid that this was just going to end up being fortune cookie wisdom strewn within and some sort of like road movie where he walks around kicking different guys' ass along a road to some ultimate goal. And I was glad to find out that wasn't it. This was way more fun than that. It was dripping with 70s nostalgia, but not nostalgic at the time. This was very much of the 70s at the time. I'm enjoying the score. I'm enjoying the fights. I'm just enjoying the heck out of it. There's a few parts that are a little corny that don't age well, but I think that's part of the charm of this movie. And now to find out that Williams has more movies, Black Belt Jones, I'm going to check that out. I'm pretty excited to look forward to that. And yeah, I'll probably go back and check out some more Bruce Lee stuff before this, knowing that, you know, this was his last movie. I guess I'll be interested to see how he got here and maybe with a smaller audience and not necessarily a Western audience. So overall, yeah, I've heard about it for years. People have talked about it. I probably had seen it before. I can now honestly sit down and say I've seen it and it's something I dig. And so, yeah, it's a recommend for me. Fun, fun movie.
Jacob.
Yeah, what's telling to me about this one when I watch it, again, there are Kung Fu films with better choreography that are more just visually beautiful to watch. I'll say, like, Jet Li, Fist of Legend, which is a remake of Fist of Fury / Chinese Connection, depending what version you watch, but amazing choreography in that. Li is just a very different style with those quick bursts and just so violent, but he makes his presence known. Like, this is bigger than the other Chinese films that he had done. It's just bigger sets, just great locations here in Hong Kong when we're on the boats and just seeing this seaside village and people living on the boats. Great travel log when we get to the fortress, just beautiful again, looking all these fields with people in their kung fu outfits practicing their kung fu. And then, yeah, the hall that Han's in with just all the bright colors. Just this is a great looking film. And yeah, any dings that I'm going to give it are very minor. Again, why is Tanya in this? Why does she end up dead? What's the real deal with Roper and Williams? Like, could we got some more character development? Sure, maybe. But for me, a great kung fu film. There's a lot of kung fu films that I'll watch that aren't great, but I just like watching the fighting. But I like the intriguing story here. This is a good James Bond movie. Like, again, I've been watching all those Sean Connery things, and this is better than any of those ones. Like, it's just more streamlined as well, but and it's got fighting that I like. But yeah, Lee has a great presence. It's a shame that he was taken before this film could even come out and he could see the response and just see what he did for people, bringing this kind of, you call it fortune cookie wisdom, but just the things he would say, such a huge presence that, yeah, this is the best stage for him. I like his other kung fu films, but this, because there is so much money behind it, it's so beautiful looking. Yeah, a fun film, fun fighting, a fun B exploitation storylines. Yeah, strong recommend for Enter the Dragon.
If you like kung fu films, I imagine you already own Enter the Dragon multiple times, multiple cuts, Blu-ray, DVD, digital. So I don't need to recommend it to people who are kung fu fans. But I do believe this to be the foundation of every kung fu film. Yes, Mortal Kombat just stole. Like, they should sue.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, the master, we see that character come back so many times. Kill Bill is what I kept going to. I just waited for the master to tug on his beard, like the one who trained Uma Thurman in that film. And I've been known to look at the originators of things like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Exorcist and say, yes, it introduced the world to things that would be aped and become great. But going back and watching those original movies does not hold up as an entertaining experience. This movie is not kung fu homework. This movie is entertaining as hell. And even if you don't like kung fu films, it's got enough of that James Bond spy plot to bring you in. And it's got really good actors. We have praised Lee time and time again. I don't know what else I can say, but John Saxon is really good here. Better than anything else I've seen him in ever.
Better than when he's villain B and Knight Rider?
Exactly. I haven't seen him in a whole lot, but he's really good here. He has charisma and really holds the screen with all of his betting jokes. And yes, I will be looking up Jim Kelly to see more of him, because if I can't have more Bruce Lee, I want more Jim Kelly kicking ass and more of his quips. It's just really good. And Williams calls it out. He's like, Han is out of a comic book. If you like comic book movies, you'll like this. This is much better than Iron Fist. If you like martial arts movies, it's a staple. If you like spy films, it's going to bring you in. There's no guns, but what you get here is far better choreographed and far more visceral. It does have flaws, like Jacob said. I can't give this a complete recommend. I think the pacing's a little bit slow in the beginning because I just want a little bit more fighting a little bit earlier. I think that some of the side trips we make, like to the graveyard and the flashback in a flashback, is just a little weird. And I really feel the female characters are tragically underserved in this. From the sister who, I can't even say she's refrigerated because Lee was going before he even knew the sister was dead. But,
well, I think she knew she was dead. He didn't know how she died. She didn't know it was Han.
Yeah, but he was still going anyway. This just gave him extra personal ammo. It almost feels like an add-in scene. Like, we need Lee to have personal reasons, too. And Mei Ling, we get that one scene with her. She's an operative. She could be helping him. You know, I just keep thinking about the films Jackie Chan did with Michelle Yeoh, you know, where the two fought back to back. I think that would be a good use of the British operative who's already there. But still, those quibbles aside, it's really good, and I give it a strong recommend.
3 for 3 on Enter the Dragon.
It's much more solid than Mortal Kombat.
Definitely.
And speaking of solid, thank you, patrons, for doing us a solid and supporting our show. And we're excited for what's coming next.
Do we know what's coming next? I knew this was a late decision. What else do we got planned?
Yeah, this one was late, but with us doing the Al Pacino films, the gangster films, and the cop films over on our donation feed, we're going to do a couple other gangster films that are pretty seminal for the time and we might not ever get to otherwise. In July, can't touch this, we're reviewing The Untouchables.
Okay, I was trying to think, I'm like, MC Hammer was in a gangster film?
And then in August, another gangster film of a bit of a different type. We get some Wesley Snipes, Ice-T, Chris Rock, Mario Van Peebles, and Judd Nelson.
One of those do not belong.
In the Mario Van Peebles film New Jack City. So that's going to be coming up the next couple months. After that, who knows? We still are very open to suggestions. Let us know what you might like to hear. And if you want to force our hand and make us review something, absolutely anything you want that's been professionally released and obtainable by us and our listeners, you can do that by upping your pledge for 1 month. But no matter what, we hope you enjoy the shows we've got planned, and thank you once more for supporting us. And Justin, Jacob, thank you for joining me. And now it's time for the dragon to exit.
Mr. Han, suddenly I'd like to leave your island.
It is not possible.
Bullshit, Mr. Handman.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
Let us celebrate. Gentlemen, you have our gratitude.
Now Playing relies on support from listeners like you to keep going. So thanks to you all.
How much do I have left in the bank?
$63.43.
It's all yours.
Thanks. Only I think you'll need it.
You want a bet?
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
A martial artist has to take responsibility for himself and to accept the consequences of his own doing.
The opinions expressed in Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions. Behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and you will break the enemy.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Then there is a point. You will not go beyond.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I must leave. Please try to find a way to forgive me.
Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, a documentary that I put in my book, and
I don't know if it's a documentary. Like, there's magical stuff in that movie.
Are you saying there's nothing magical in life, Jacob?
I just don't know if I'd use documentary.
How about a biopic?
Sure, a fictional biopic.
His entering the
Dragon
entertainment industry. Yes, entering the dragon. So, just to compare right now to Mortal Kombat, we have a Shaolin monk going to avenge a sibling at a martial arts tournament being followed by someone from down under who's a criminal and mean.
On a boat, yep.
And
again, though, this is the original. Like, yeah, there's no weird industrial club scene with, like, SWAT team members in this film, which I thought was really weird in Mortal Kombat.
Nothing against the score. It might have done a little bit better with some more KMFDM.
You wanted some KMFDM in this?
No, I'm...
Like, this man is cut. He's got no time for women. He's got to be doing push-ups and training in that room. The producer said, you touched him, and it was just solid rock. There wasn't an ounce of fat on him. He is just amazing looking in this film.
Yeah, but in real life, he had time for women. His wife has actually got a cameo in the big party scene.
Well, again...
Brandon came from somewhere.
Yes, in real life, Chinese people do procreate. In their films, it was a very repressed thing. You do not discuss, you do not show. Yeah, we see them wrong name.
And speaking of solid, thank you, patrons, for doing us a solid. How's that for a segue? Can't touch this. We're reviewing The Untouchables.
Okay, I was trying to... I'm like, MC Hammer was in a gangster film?
Yeah, I thought maybe Adam's Family Values or something was coming up.
And yet that's still better than the direct-to-video third installment.
There was a third one?
Yeah.
Raul Julia couldn't have been in that one. He had passed by then, right?
No, he was dead.
It's got to have no one. Angelica Houston ain't there. It's
Adam's Family Reunion with Daryl Hannah as Morticia.
What?
Tim Curry as Gomez.
Oh, Tim Curry. Wow. Slumming it.
Wow, Gomez is just killing people.
And... Patrick Thomas as Uncle Fester. Who's Patrick Thomas?
I don't know.
Customer number one from Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, I watched that. I still don't know who customer number one is, though.